everyone, and welcome to another episode of Horror Homeroom Conversations. I'm Elizabeth Irwin.
I'm Gwen Hoffman.
I'm Dawn Keatley.
And in today's episode, Australian horror takes center stage courtesy of Danny Filippo and Michael Filippo's Talk to Me. In the film, Mia, who is grappling with the imminent second anniversary of her mother's death, attends a party with Jade, her best friend, and Riley, Jade's brother. There, they are given the opportunity to commune with the spirit world via an embalmed hand. Predictably, things do not go according to plan. With unrelenting hype and a domestic box office gross outpacing all other A24 releases, the film is a potent hybrid of gore and dread. But is it the best horror film of the year so far? We're breaking it all down today with spoilers, so stay tuned.
I would say yes.
I love it.
In answer to that question, I do think it's the best horror movie of 2023 so far.
I saw you eagerly nodding, so yeah. I was curious.
I'm nodding. I can't think of any others from this year that I've liked as much.
Have you seen Totally Killer?
No, oh my gosh. I know you two have.
Yes, so. It's a very different. I mean, it's not a great movie, but it's a really fun movie.
It is a good movie.
I want to watch it.
Thank you for saying that, because I was going to say I have a hard time calling this the best horror film of the year, but I don't have anything to compare it to because so many films that I've watched over the past year haven't been phenomenal.
Yeah.
But when you said Totally Killer, yes. That's definitely up there. Yeah.
I mean, that's because it's a throwback to the 80s.
It is.
That does not hurt.
You guys will always.
Ripe with comedy.
And it's a comedy horror.
Yeah.
So I think you're going to hate it. You're like, yeah, maybe.
It actually looks a little bit like, I think we're digressing, but it looks a little bit like Happy Death Day, which I did like.
Oh, you might. It has a similar sensibility, I think.
It's on the list. Maybe we can do that next time. But on to why I think Talk to Me is so good. Mm-hmm. I guess I should justify it since I made you two watch it. And I do think it's good. Mostly, when I watched it for the first time, I really didn't know where it was going. It has a shocking scene, the scene with Riley. And I guess we'll describe the plot at some point sooner in a bit more detail. A shocking scene that I actually screamed at, and I don't do that very often. It was shocking and gory, and I didn't see it coming. But then as the film went on, I just thought, it just is this really chilling, vision of death. You know, just when the living teens, hold this embalmed hand, they get a glimpse into a world that doesn't seem to be demons, though some reviewers called them demons. They just seem like people who have died. And it seems like the film is about, in part, this is what happens to you after death. You wander in blackness. And I just found that finally really kind of pretty disturbing.
It did feel a little Insidious-esque when, that blackness.
Yeah.
But it felt more like a purgatory. Which it doesn't track with, you know, when you watch the whole film, you know, how things happen. I don't know.
The film is confusing, and I don't know if that's purposeful or not. I don't understand what happens at the end between Jade and Riley and Mia. I don't understand how people end up dead and trapped in this place where they then get sort of called by the embalmed hand. So I guess we'll have to talk about that. And there was this stark contrast between these teenagers who are so dumb. But you know, they're so dumb in just a perfectly teenage way.
Mm-hmm. It felt very real.
Yeah, it was very real. And you kind of felt for them. You couldn't condemn them for what they were doing, even though you thought, my God, you are so stupid.
Yeah.
But, you know, because they were enjoying, getting inhabited by dead people. They thought it was fun, and they, you know, streamed it on YouTube. Isn't this cool? And I'm like, you don't know what you're messing with. What is wrong with you? But there was that teenage joy and invulnerability compared with this, black sense of death that I found disturbing.
See, I guess that actually does kind of track, though. When I think back to, like, growing up, sixth grade birthday parties. Now, we didn't record everything back then.
Yeah.
But we always did, like, the seances, light as a feather, stiff as a board, yeah. Bloody Mary, Ouija board, you name it. We kind of did all of the above. Now, I don't know if I was going to let anybody jump into me. That's maybe a little extra.
But wouldn't you have done but, that? Really?
No, that was a line I still wouldn't have crossed. But I also am not part of a generation that eats Tide Pods. So,
yeah,
you know, but it is that, very different.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that because it struck me repeatedly throughout the movie that it would be the same thing. Like, they're entering sort of that space through an embalmed hand, but it could just as easily be drugs.
Yeah.
And have the exact same story unfold.
True.
In fact, it looks like... When the kids hold the embalmed hand and this, you know, this dead spirit enters their body, their eyes turn really black and mm-hmm. and it does seem like they're in some sort of drugged state. And then, and you know, it's terrifying. And it's only when they come out of it, like when Mia does it for the first time, you know, it was an awful experience when you're watching it. But she comes out of it after 90 seconds or so, or a little bit more. And she says, that was awesome.
Yeah. Chasing that high.
Yeah.
And I think at that age, you don't really understand the consequences of your actions. Same thing, too. We would play the pass out game.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh,
right. It was stupid now, knowing what I know now. But at that age, you think you're invincible.
Yeah.
And nothing's going to happen. So as long as you don't supersede the 90 seconds, oh, everything's going to be fine. You know, and the more times they're successful, the more invincible they probably start to feel.
Yeah, I can distinctly remember playing the passing out game. Mm-hmm. Not a single one of us ever thought of things like, you could hit your head.
Yeah,
right. Which is exactly what the me now would say.
Yeah. So what do you think, Liz?
Well, did you like it? Like, how would you explain, your reaction to it? Did you like it? Did you not like it?
I'm a little bit more towards favorable than neutral.
Okay. So I'm probably a little bit more toward neutral because I think there's like two ways to look at this movie. The first is like, did I enjoy it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, it was okay. Like, there's a worse way to spend a Friday night for sure, you know, but is it something that I will rewatch for enjoyment? No. But I do think it's a fascinating film in terms of what it's representing in terms of mainstream horror right now and like the labels of mainstream horror. And honestly, saying the word mainstream in relation to horror is perhaps half of the problem. Mm-hmm. But I kept going back to labels because is this horror? And I'm like, I'm not sure that I would actually classify it as horror compared against like maybe 90s and before movies. It's certainly horror within our current cultural zeitgeist.
Yeah.
But horror has become something very different. And I think this film sort of encapsulates those differences for me. So it's an interesting film in that respect to me to sort of think through labels. And I have like fragments of ideas, but I mean, we'll talk about that. But yeah, I mean, I guess watch it. I don't know. I didn't love it. I really didn't.
It falls in line with those Ouija board movies.
Well, it felt so derivative, right? Like, I felt like every aspect of this film was completely derivative, and I could point to other films that had done it better. And especially the fact that this is definitely grief horror. I mean, there's no getting away from that. And I'm like, are we really – we already had Midsommar, which forced our engagement with the protagonist's grief. Why do we have to have it replicated here but not as well done, I didn't think? Even though this is not to take away from the acting. I thought the acting in the film was actually really good.
Agreed.
And I think that's where my frustration came in because I felt like the actors deserved a script that was doing something different, especially when you come in with like all of the advanced press, like this is groundbreaking. There's nothing groundbreaking about this to my mind.
People did say it was groundbreaking and it is, you know, even though I loved the film and I've watched so many horror movies recently that I've just found boring. Mm-hmm. Like I'm just looking away, checking my phone. I really felt gripped by this one. And all the parts were derivative, but they were put together in a way that I thought was kind of surprising. And the ending I thought was different. Like I thought there was something different and pretty chilling about the ending. But yeah, I mean, I think it was in Roger Ebert reviews. It suffers from being yet another recent horror movie built on the trauma of loss. So
my personal opinion is that grief has always been baked into horror. Mm-hmm. I would say much more than fear, but it's always been implicit. And what's happened in recent years is that they've made it explicit. And I think that's upset the boundaries and the labels of what horror is and what horror traditionally does.
So then do we have to go over a little bit of the plot of the film? Because I know we've gotten criticism about that in the past. Because I know we're going in
we
now.
We just jump in because we just assume that anybody who's listening has watched the movie, because otherwise you're getting spoiled
right. Yeah, we do spoilers. Yeah, I mean, it's... I mean, I think we've talked about the first part with the scenes of teens holding this embalmed hand and getting fleetingly possessed by a dead spirit. Both Mia and then Riley, they're inhabited for too long. And so I think the movie is then about how that haunting, the spirit, possession, whatever it is, kind of lingers. They're either in touch with the spirits of the dead or the spirits of the dead are still inside of them. And for Mia, it's particularly difficult because her mother died 2 years ago, possibly from suicide. Mia thinks it was an accident. I think it becomes clear that her mother killed herself. But Riley tries to hurt himself at one point in the movie. This was, for me, the part where I screamed out loud, where Riley, who is possessed, bangs his head violently on a table and tries to gouge out his eyeball, which, as I was saying earlier, I can't say I actually watched that part. but speaking of derivative, I mean, that's the scene from Hereditary.
Right.
Yeah.
Except it's much more violent than that and goes on for longer.
Yeah.
But less, to my mind, but less of a surprise. The reason Hereditary, at least that moment, worked for me is because I did not see it coming.
Okay. Yeah.
This I saw coming. I knew something was going to happen.
Yeah.
And so when it did, it didn't land for me as much. But you said two things that I think are really interesting. You said about empathy and also about screaming at that scene. And I think my reaction was completely different. Like, I didn't feel empathy for these characters as much as I would have thought. And I attribute it honestly to that opening scene where they see the kangaroo suffering and none of them do anything. They're very blasé about it. And yes, I understand the metaphorical meaning that's baked into this movie, but that really turned me off on the characters because, you know, it just situated them in a different realm than what I would have wanted. And also with the scene with Riley, I did not have that reaction. It seemed a spectacle to me, but it didn't sort of hit that mark of revulsion that I would need it to in order for me to classify it as horror. And again, we'll get into the label question. Maybe there's something wrong with
me.
I don't know, but it didn't. And I mean, people's mileage will vary.
Yeah.
So I think I can definitely see some people regarding this as a horror movie and others being like, I just don't know if it hit the mark. The same with Hereditary. I've talked to a lot of people who feel like that was just sort of an amped up drama.
Yeah. Well, I agree with
one shock moment.
Yeah.
And so I think you could have a similar conversation about this film.
I just want to go back to the kangaroo.
Me
because
too.
I thought that was interesting. And we've seen that in other movies. I mean, at Get Out, where Rose and Chris hit the deer at the side of the road, but also The Invitation, which I think is a really interesting film, where the two main characters hit a fox, I think, or a coyote or something like that. In both those cases, the characters do something about it. I mean, I was profoundly bothered that Mia just drives around the kangaroo and leaves it there.
Yeah.
And especially then he continues to say, but he's crying. Yeah, I mean, so it is a different generation, too, on top of it. Like, the problem-solving skills are very different, and maybe we are going to start to see some of that.
It is. But I guess it was that question of, like, did you call? So there's, like, multiple people being brought into this, teenagers and I think an adult as well, that are still choosing to do nothing, even though the options are presented right there.
Yeah, and I wonder what that says later through the film, because it makes it, you know, it sets it up as if it would have been the right thing to do to put this out of its misery,
which
I think the three of us agree on. But what does that say later on?
Well, I think it also ties into Mia, right? Because Mia is clearly in pain and she's clearly suffering and nobody's really intervening. And you see her interact with adults. Her father is completely tuned out.
Yeah.
Jade's mother gives like perfunctory hugs, but doesn't really sort of sit with her and try to figure out what's going on. And so she's kind of ignored and in pain the same way the kangaroo was.
But so was Riley at some point.
I mean, I thought Riley was the most obvious sort of follow through on the kangaroo. Because, you know, Riley is in the hospital after smashing his head and trying to gouge his eye out. And I guess every time he comes to consciousness, he tries to kill himself. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, he's possessed by whatever, a spirit that's trying to kill him because, oh, they want him to join them. They want his soul to join them in this blackness.
Yeah, and then there's that moment where Mia's going to take him in the wheelchair, and she's basically going to kill him so that she can free him. But I think she can only recognize that because she is in that same place as the kangaroo, because she is silently suffering, that she recognizes that in Riley. And that's why she intervenes in a way that she didn't previously.
So that shows she learned something. Because I think also, when she's at the hospital and she's about to take Riley, presumably to kill him, she actually she hears the kangaroo and then briefly sees it. So the kangaroo kind of comes back and it's alive, seemingly. What do you guys think happens when Mia takes Riley in the wheelchair down to the highway and she's going to presumably push him into traffic to kill him, to free him from the torment that he's in? But instead, she ends up in traffic.
Yeah, and trapped in this world that
we're
not really...
Well, that's my second question. Why is she trapped?
I also have a third question. What is happening with Jade and Jade's family? Because, you know, once Mia's killed, like, the brother Riley is cured. And then all you see is the family leaving, but there's no recognition that not only has, like, your best friend and someone who's been in your home since they were little tried to kill your brother and now is dead and also tried to kill, they think, her father.
Yeah.
It's a strange way that they leave those characters. It's almost like they're leaving Mia completely trapped in her own grief in perpetuity.
There are lots of questions about the end of this film, and I don't understand, you know, exactly what was going on. But you did remind me of one of the things that I found sort of chilling about the film. And it's like, at first, Mia seems to be part of this family. And this made me feel for Mia more than anything else. She seems to be a part of the family, you know, Jade and Riley and their mother, Sue. But the minute this thing happens to Riley, and granted, it is Mia's fault. Like, she was dumb. Mm-hmm. You know, she let this kid, 13 maybe, you know, invite this dead soul into his body after Jade said no. But they push her out. And, and I felt like, you know, you said Mia was part of your family, so therefore you shouldn't be pushing her out. Like, you know, you it kind of showed Mia was never part of their family. And she just gets increasingly isolated and sort of left with her own grief.
She's set up as an outsider throughout. Yeah. Even when she walks into that first party, they're like, oh, why'd you have to invite her here? She's clingy and weird and whatnot.
Because she's experienced death and grief. I feel like she's no one really wants her around.
And she's actually one of the nicer characters. If you think about her relationship with Riley.
Yeah.
Like, she's the one that picks him up. She's the one that invites him out, like, with good intention at first, you know. She's the one that when he's scared, she says, yeah, sure, you can lay with me. You know, she has a very maternal instinct in her at first.
And really, like, the trespass that she engages in isn't really that abnormal. I mean, she thinks she's being contacted by her mother, like the spirit of her mother. And so she's acting, I think, as though anybody would if you were contacted by a loved one. So it's not like she's a monster in any sense of the word, I don't think.
No, I still, though, I don't think I would have let him go past 90 seconds.
Because you're thinking reasonably. I think if you were to hear the voice of a loved one, she was so honed in on that, especially since she doesn't understand the circumstances of her mother's death and that desire for answers, that I don't think she was thinking logically in that moment.
I guess. And maybe
because she's young, too. Right. I mean, they're like 17. Right. Yeah. So
but I try to think about, like, all of us growing up with Ouija boards. There was a certain set of rules that, you know, sometimes somebody might say that there's something.
Yeah.
And it very well might not be, you know, and there was just like this. You light a candle, you blow out a candle. So you always open and you always close. You have to have a certain amount of mistrust. So I don't know. I get it that it would be an emotional moment. But I think, at least with Ouija boards, we all kind of knew, like, you you can't trust everything.
Or anything.
Yeah. And I don't know if I'd sacrifice the living for the dead.
No, I get that. I guess what I was confused about is that all of the apparitions just seem really sad.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then the one who haunts Mia is like more quote unquote demonic. And I'm like, why is there that difference? And why are we trapping Mia in this never ending sadness at the end of the film? And she's just waiting for someone to quote unquote let her in. So she takes on that position of the ghost mm-hmm. from the beginning. And
well, wasn't she almost in that same role as Alive?
Well, that's oh, it. That's exactly. That's it. Exactly.
She was just kind of walking through life in yeah. sadness. Yeah. yeah.
But then why have it continue? Like that's
unresolved.
Right.
That's so true. It's like her life after death is just an exaggeration of what her life before death was like. I mean, the way she follows her father and he ignores her, you mm-hmm. know, she's like, dad, he's walking down the hallway into the elevator, doesn't say anything. I mean, the film really makes a point of only like the few scenes he's in, he's on the edges, he's blurred out, you can't see his face. He just doesn't interact with Mia. And then she's outside of Jade and Sue and Riley, the happy family, you know, without her, mm-hmm. even more so. But I didn't understand the logic of this post-death state.
No, I didn't either.
And I didn't understand why, if Mia threw herself into traffic, maybe they're all suicides, the people in whose spirits live on in this blackness.
Then I feel like at least the movie Smile, which is a whole nother ball of wax, but at least Smile connected those dots. This one doesn't.
It doesn't connect.
It's unnecessarily ambiguous. That's the word.
Yeah.
Yes, it's very late. It's unnecessarily ambiguous. And I don't know why the filmmakers would choose to do that unless they're setting up a sequel.
Well, they are.
Well, there you go.
Of course they are.
I mean, they already have a prequel shot. Found footage with Cole and Duckett.
Yeah, I read on the Wikipedia that they released it as like some YouTube videos.
Oh, it's out?
No. That there were like segments that they released on YouTube, but the people responded so negatively because they thought it was real that they pulled it and now they're repackaging it. At least that's what Wikipedia told me. So, you know, I believe all things wiki.
And there's going to be a sequel, though. No, they're being closed mouth about what it is. Like, will it follow Mia and Jade? Or will it follow that Greek, you know, we're invited into the Greek, guys at the end who have another embalmed hand. And it's interesting that like one explanation of the hand is that it belonged to a medium. Another is that it's a Satanist hand. mm-hmm. And I think there's a similar confusion between, you know, the dead people sort of wandering in the darkness. Like Vulture called them demons. But on the other hand, they seem to just be ghosts.
Right.
Or, you know, the spirits of dead people.
You know what they reminded me of? I can't remember the stupid name of the movie. It was from the 80s. And it involved, like, an incestuous, rich, white family. And at some point, they end up in this pile of each other. And they start to melt into each other. It's going to drive me nuts.
I miss that one.
That I can't. I'm sure
you've seen it, Liz.
I probably have.
It's going to drive me nuts. I'm going to have to revisit this.
I feel like I
would
remember that, though.
Yeah. Oh. That seems like a memorable scene.
They literally turn into, like, silly putty with one another. And, it's this entitled... Oh.
See, it reminded me of... There's the movie Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things, which is more of a zombie type of movie, but it kind of had a similar sensibility, I thought.
So I'm going to be honest with you. Like, the whole grief and loss thing completely was lost. Lost on me because
really?
I was so stuck on the game and the teens that it just read like another installment of, you know, like your Final Destinations, like teen movies,
which definitely qualifies. Yeah.
Completely lost on me. Even, you know, I was just like, oh, well, I really liked the opening scene. I really liked the scene with Riley. Like there were some good, you know, shocking moments, which I enjoyed. And then I purposely avoided the reviews until afterwards. And then I saw the one review from Esquire. And he specifically kept coming back to the first scene, you know, where the boy is locked into his room at the party and his brother goes looking for him. And, you know, then everything transpires. He stabs his brother, kills himself. And like, I started to think about what all this says about the internet age, the fact that everybody needs to video everything. Yeah. And this, again, it kind of almost goes to the kangaroo, the lack of empathy. like that this stuff is going on and all we can think to do is record it and get views and likes and that kind of thing. And then I read that thing from Esquire and it just said, I kept coming back to this moment, meaning the first moment with the brothers, which it turns out foreshadows the dark crux of the film. How do we reach out to our lost loved ones when they've closed themselves off to us, locked the door, and thrown away the key? Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, shoot. Like, there's a whole other dimension to the film, which you guys, of course, picked up right away. But to me, it was just lost. And I was like, oh, that part I liked. Like, it was very thoughtful. Then when I started to rethink it through those terms, but I think it was because I missed all that.
There were three locked doors that people had to break down. I mean, there was the one where the boy has to break down the door to get to his brother. And then there's the repeated scene, I think, of Mia's dad breaking down the door to get to her mother. And then there's a scene where Mia's father has to break down the door to get to Mia.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if it is, like, the people who end up in the blackness at the end, I wonder if it is suicide.
Yeah.
Because the boy at the beginning, the kid at the beginning, kills himself. I mean, his brother survives, but the one who dies is a suicide. I think Mia kills herself. It looks like the woman who inhabits Mia, who's partially clothed and, like, soaked in water.
The toe sucker?
Yeah, the toe sucker. That was an unexpected film.
Yeah, that was.
The dog.
Yes.
I blocked that out. How did you remind me of that?
Yeah.
But I think, isn't there, at the very end, when she's looking in the mirror, isn't there a door off to the right of her? Like,
that she has
to go through to get, like, when she's called? I think there is.
There is. She goes through a door to get to.
Yeah, so that's another
like
continuation of the motif into the other world, too. Yeah. So that would make sense.
So it is about people, I think, who are isolated and unreachable in life. So it's a metaphor for this.
Mm-hmm.
And often they end up killing themselves. And then that's what they are in death. And the hand is the only way to reach them. But it could be a Satanist hand.
But I guess that's where I struggle with this movie, is that it's part of that trend toward making all of, like, this great subtext super explicit.
Mm-hmm.
And so in thinking about, like, the labels of this, the first thing I kind of thought about was Stephen King's Dance Macabre, where he talks about that difference between terror and horror. And I guess the easiest way to explain it is, like, terror is you hear something down in the basement as you approach the door to go to the basement. That's terror. That's the suspense of what's coming. When you open the door and go downstairs, that's horror because you're being confronted with it, right? And so for me, this film kind of leaned more on the terror side than the actual horror. What I do think it did was kind of lean in on dread, which definitely is part of horror. But you think about, like, modern horror films, if we're focusing so much on dread, one, where's the trespass actually happening? And two, how does it distinguish itself from just dramas that also sort of traffic in dread? Because we're seeing sort of these big budgeted, mainstream, awesome films with, like, great casts, well acted. It's kind of lost that taboo, seedy underbelly that horror always had and horror always cultivated. So it almost feels like these films are like a new category maybe of horror, or maybe it's more thriller and figuring out that. So like I said, I don't have like a definitive answer on that, but I am curious about all those labels and whether or not you see this film as explicitly horror. I know you do because
you screamed. I definitely do, and I disagree. I kind of disagree with everything you said there. I mean, I do see the difference between terror and horror.
Yeah.
I this film for me really fell squarely into horror. There was a lot of dread, but the horror, I mean, and not just the scene where Riley bashes his head, but just the way in which these teenagers get sucked into this world where they have no control and things are decaying and rotting and falling apart. I mean, you know, the woman, the drowned woman that sort of shadows Mia, her mother who's decaying.
Well, no, I just think about, like, the portal that they dive into all day, every day on their phones, which they didn't let go of in the whole entire film.
That's true.
And
that's
all they do, and it's like this perpetuation. So you see them on this film recording death. So then you can only assume that then they consume similar activities. And that part, I think, is...
But were you scared? Did this movie make you scared?
Yes, actually it did. No.
See, it didn't make me scared at all.
But I think we're a little different.
You are.
Understatement of
my
the year.
Air quotes have just gone up.
I mean, I have to say, to go back to Smile, which you brought up, and which, you know, the opening scene of Smile, and actually a lot of the central concept of Smile is somewhat similar to what happens here.
Oh, yeah.
I did find that more scary.
Yeah.
I did too, I have to say. I mean, it was kind of terrifying.
I guess I just was never afraid, and I was never really disgusted. And so I'm kind of left
with... Not the toe-sucking or the French kissing with the pug.
Yeah, you're trespassing with the dog, especially. Yeah. Like, but that's the one moment. And it, can you really hang a horror movie on one moment? Especially like...
Hereditary did.
100%. But I would say Hereditary is not a horror movie.
No, I agree. I guess... And I try to balance. Am I thinking of it from my mid-40s brain, would I say the same thing at that age? When I was a teenager, I probably would have enjoyed the film more. But I still equally think I would have hated those teenagers. But at the same time, in some ways, it still fits the genre because I find myself still wanting to yell at the screen. So in previous years, it would have been like, don't go down those steps. Mm-hmm. Don't go in the closet, dum-dum. And like the whole entire time, I was like, dude, you guys are idiots.
Yeah.
Stop it. Don't let the kid grab onto the hand. And you're not watching your watch. So I found myself still wanting to have those moments. So I was like, okay, well that...
Yeah, so
I'll buy that.
Yeah,
that fits.
But there's something, I still think there's something happening with mainstream horror. And granted, I'm talking specifically about mainstream horror.
It's getting blah. It's watered down.
It's also not trespassing the way it used to trespass. And I don't know if that's a change in cultural attitudes toward things or it's occupying a really strange space.
Do you think it's part of the fear of cancel culture? Like, because didn't that all start, what was that movie, The Hunt?
Right.
And right around then, like, didn't they have to put it off? I mean, they chose to, you know. But
backlash.
There's a constant, probably capitalistic concern.
Mm-hmm. I think that
about
is
releasing
a big part of
things.
I guess maybe next time we need to find a film that does that.
Yeah.
Because it is true that all of these mainstream movies, I mean, I really like your point about trespass. Mm-hmm. Because what Talk to Me is about is, you know, it's sort of an allegory about grief, about losing your hold on life, Mia, you know, moving slowly toward death and suicide. I mean, that's what the film is about with Mia.
With the irony of a hand, losing your grip.
Yeah.
And if you would have reached out to a hand prior to this, then possibly these other people wouldn't be on the other side.
I love that. And I didn't even think about that. But you are absolutely correct.
Well,
that explains the hand.
And the whole talk to me and let me in. I mean, those are what people who are suicidal kind of want to say, can't, people don't
listen. God, we're smart together. That is so smart, Dawn.
You solved the movie, Gwen.
Even too, like when she said the talk to me, like,
so that is a particular I mean, and that's why it horrified me, because it was about that. But that's about something realistic.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going where people shouldn't go. It's not transgressive, really. You're talking, you want more horror where there's actual trespass, transgression.
Interestingly, I'm not actually a big one for like the extreme violence or the extreme horror movies. But I guess I either want real trespass or, and this would be my preference, I want an actual monster.
I do like monsters.
Because, you know, I've written stuff about like grief as the monster.
Yeah.
And it's done much better in The Final Girls than it is here. But I'm kind of ready to move away from just sort of these abstract ideas and emotions that everyone engages with at some point to actual monsters again, whether they be human or manufactured or some version combination
thereof.
Okay,
we need a monster movie.
We need something.
That's interesting. So we need an actual monster, not some sort of emotion, usually grief and trauma, as the monster. I just watched The Babadook again.
Oh, there you go.
That's a good movie, though.
Which is a brilliant film, but it's a perfect example of what you're saying.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all about grief. It's a brilliant version.
It is, but I feel like the tension is a lot thicker in that one. Yeah.
And you get your monster.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's easier. I don't know. I guess maybe it's the burden of being academics. I don't know that you want some. I want more subtext to kind of play around with.
They're playing with the boundary of life and death. Yeah. I mean, which most horror films do.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, I don't know that you can have a horror movie without playing with the boundary of life and death.
As much as I liked it, it was kind of derivative, like you said. I mean, we've already mentioned Hereditary, Get Out. The part, have you guys seen Paranormal Activity 5?
No.
The one that's set in Los Angeles? Mm-mm. Oh, it's actually good.
Oh. But
there's a scene, or no, it's 4. Or, it is 5. Yeah. Anyway, well, I won't go into that. But now I'm thinking it's derivative of The Babadook, too. I was thinking of something else. Oh, It Follows.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. With the woman that sort of pursues Mia, like she keeps seeing it out of the corner of her eye. And she even looks like one of the dead people in It Follows. There was a drowned cheerleader.
You're right.
That Jay sees in the kitchen.
And I mean, I guess that's the issue, is that it feels it's like, horror films have almost become like an Ouroboros, where it's just feeding on itself and perpetuating sort of the same themes. And, you know, I love, again, the actors are really good. So I think that for me is what made it, you know, like I didn't mind watching it. Like I didn't actively hate this movie at all, but it's just not anything I'll watch again.
We've got to do better than that next time.
But we are literally the only people I feel that say this, because I read the reviews and the reviews are just like 5 stars, 5 stars, 5 stars. I'm like, Christ, could I get these people to like rate the restaurant I'm going to make? Because I don't even have to make good food.
Like, I didn't read any reviews before watching this.
No.
And don't you feel, though, like we've entered that era where you're always constantly hearing like, this is the scariest movie of all time. People are passing out because they're so afraid.
Not from just regular people, though. People love to trash things.
Oh, see, I haven't talked to any actual people who like this movie.
I just think about, like, you know, when you read the people that add on to a review with their own comments.
I never so do instead that. Of, I like, should do that.
Instead of your just Eberts.
Yeah, your you Eberts. Know?
I just think about the people that add on to reviews.
Yeah.
And I was like, everybody was like, this is amazing. Although certain places I saw that it was like a 3.9. But even still, the majority of the comments were very, very favorable.
But what I would like to know is, are these people who are reviewing it, are they horror fans or are they people who just like movies? And are totally cool and both, you know, are equally legitimate. But I think maybe how you experience this movie might depend on that answer.
That's a good question. So, Liz, I have to ask you, did you like the ending? Did you find it predictable? Those are two questions.
I found it very predictable.
Yeah, me too.
But I didn't mind the ending because I like movies and books that sort of leave characters in a suspended state of trauma, which I don't know what that says about me, but I don't like the neat endings, I guess. And that's like something, especially with like the 80s horror films that I always kind of struggled with, is because you sort of get that return to the veneer of normalcy after you've just spent 2 hours unpacking why normal never existed to begin with.
Do you think it would have been better if she tossed Riley into the traffic?
I think it would have been.
I thought for a second she might, and I was like, I was hoping. And not to say, Riley was a great character. Like, I loved Riley, but I was like, oh my God, this might actually be good.
Do you know the two characters I was most interested in were the two that actually brought the hands?
Haley and John.
Yeah.
Yes. And
yeah,
I wanted more of them.
Maybe they reminded me of Scream.
Yes, very much
so. Maybe the next film will be about them. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Because, like, how did they get this?
Yeah.
Where did this come from? Like, what was their – did they get – oh, I guess they got it from the original people who were killed, right?
Duckett and Cole.
Yeah, because remember, at some point he was like, bro, when are you going to stop doing this to people?
Yeah.
But then I think to myself, if you really knew the power of the hand, why would you give it away? Why wouldn't you try to do something else with it? Which is, again,
burn it.
Not resolving when things are dying. Like, just end it.
But they gave it up way too easily. Like, if you think about it as chasing a high, they had access to that thing that's going to give them a high in perpetuity. They both just sort of gave it up all at once when they saw that, like, some bad things were happening. And that did not ring true to me at all. I think one of them would have still wanted it for that high.
It almost see, and it's also interesting, too, because the guys that made this are YouTubers.
Yeah.
So then, are people chasing the high of the likes and the hits? and, you know, the social media notoriety. Because again, it doesn't exist if it's not online. And that seems to be the high. Because you see Mia continuously returning back to watch videos of it.
That's true.
So that I could see. I don't know. For as much as I loved Riley, I wanted him to go into the traffic.
Did you really?
I did. Absolutely.
Why?
Because I just wanted some resolution with the kangaroo.
Oh,
because in
I
her
gotcha.
Head, she thought she knew the answer, even though it was a misguided answer. She was trusting people. Again, she was blinded by this person that she perceived as her mother. She was blindly following that on emotion.
Yeah.
And then she was like, I have the answer. I'm going to do it. I finally have the courage to put something out of their misery. I know how to end this. And then she does it again.
Well, there is actually somebody, and I think it was in the Vulture article again, suggested that maybe Mia was going to push Riley in the traffic, but Jade came down in time
and
she pushed Mia
I thought
into
about
the
that.
Traffic.
And I would have liked that,
now
too.
That would have been a good ending.
I would have liked that, too.
And you know, Jade was significantly not in the car when Riley and Mia discovered the kangaroo.
Yeah.
And she seemed to have her shit together a little bit more. She probably would have done something.
And she is like a final girl in some ways, because if you see it that way, that she pushed her, she dealt with what was going on.
Yeah.
And again, that would track with the kangaroo.
Yeah.
Something was crying and suffering.
That was Mia.
And she
maybe
put it
more so than Riley.
Yeah.
Right.
She put him out of his misery.
Yeah.
No, I agree. That would actually work better.
But then why weren't we given that? That's
I know,
I
we
want.
Didn't see it.
No.
Yeah, we didn't see that.
And then that would also help us better understand why their family was so happy afterwards. So remember you were talking about, I don't understand why Riley's family was just kind of hanging out, chilling and whatnot. And if she was able to push Mia, get her out of the family, because she was a transgressor. She was a, you know, boundary crosser, an interloper, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Restore the normalcy of that family, everything's back to normal. And I also have to say, I love that mom. I swear she was in, I think it was Wayward Pines.
Oh.
But she was in something else. But I love her. I
love that.
I'm going to pretend that she pushed her into traffic and that I like this film. I can change my.
You can absolutely change your vote. I am medium.
But don't listen to me. We have one strong recommendation and two very
neutral.
Ambiguous neutral responses. And we will now go seeking for
a monster.
The best horror movie of 2023.
Yeah. I don't think I've seen it yet. Have you? Do you guys think you've seen it yet?
I don't.
Not
think
in this
so.
Decade.
Not in this decade. She's just going decade. Well, I think I'm hampered too, because I have to admit I'm not looking actively for the new releases anymore. I'm trying to go back and do like catalogs of things that I should have seen.
Yeah.
And haven't.
I agree.
So.
And I think too, without cable TV, I'm not exposed to commercials like I used to be, and I don't go on the internet. If I don't, I don't find out unless you guys tell me, or I accidentally stumble on it on Netflix or something else.
Right.
So.
I don't have cable anymore either. And I've noticed that definitely has impacted what I even know exists in the world. So, but one thing I do know that exists is Fall of the House of Usher, and people should watch that and then talk to me about it. I don't know where you'll talk to me, so I'm not on social media anymore. But
yeah, really.
Just reach out your hand. You've already said you're a medium and talk to me in the last few sentences. So
you can send me an email. So any final thoughts, or do we think we've unpacked everything there is to unpack with Talk to Me?
I just have to say that it does get 94% on Rotten Tomatoes and is currently ranked at the third highest rated film of 2023 so far. So,
ooh, what's it behind? Does
number
it say?
One is Huesera, The Bone Woman. It's a Mexican film
that's
been
that.
Streaming. And then second is Attachment.
Nope.
I got nothing. I haven't
if
seen
I had a,
either.
If I had a crickets button, I would hit that right now.
That's Danish. Oh, my God. Fourth is Megan.
No, stop. Stop it.
See, this is why I don't trust the people.
I quit.
Yeah.
I quit.
Fifth is Influencer, which I did like.
I did too.
And I can see that being pretty high up. Totally Killer is number seven.
Yes.
According to
There's a few good people.
I'm surprised because it really is campy.
It is,
and
extremely
it's so
campy,
silly, and it's so predictable.
That means there's a few of us good people left out there.
The cheese lovers, honestly,
absolutely,
that's what we really are.
But it has a good chase.
It does.
Like, I like a good chase.
Yeah, and I was kind of like questioning who the killer was for a bit, and then I figured it out. But you know, there was a few moments where I was not sure.
It's not that different from a Ghostface, you know, or a Scream Queens, or you know, it was.
Does it have allegory, metaphor?
Now you're asking.
It probably would if we talked about it.
I mean, we can always find. Yeah. We can always dig deep. You'd have to do a little more digging for that one, I think.
It made me want to rewatch the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie, not the show.
Oh, fine. I love that movie.
The movie.
It does say something, I think, about true crime and where we've gone with true crime. So there.
There you go.
And we will leave you with that. If you enjoyed this episode, definitely let us know. Leave a like on whatever podcasting platform that you listen to. I don't know how to do that, but people have told me that they've done that. So thank you. That's great. I think we're going to do The Exorcist next time.
I'm hoping soon. Yeah, just because it's a 50th
it's
anniversary.
It's going to be a downer of an episode.
50th anniversary of The Exorcist.
You talk about more grief, trauma, loss.
Yeah. Yeah. But that should be a fun one. But in the meantime, you can hit us up on, well, some things, Horror Homeroom. We've got a Facebook. We've got a Twitter.
X.
We've got, yes.
Send out a homing pigeon. We'll find you.
We'll find you. But in the meantime, thanks for listening, y'all, and we will talk to you soon.
Bye.